Hello there, and welcome to the Comic Book Tesseract, the weekly comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Jason Polieth. Every week we review and preview the world of comics, along with other facets of geek chic culture. Justin's sick this week, so it's just going to be me doing a solo show this week. Hope you guys don't mind. Going to go over a couple of books. Most of these actually we probably would have wound up touching on to begin with. I think the only one that we normally would have avoided is Batman and Robin, because Justin's not reading that. I'm going to touch on that just a little bit. Was not a whole lot of interesting stuff going on. A lot of stories continuing with where they're going. Captain America is at an end point of the current arc, but it's in a larger portion of a larger story. So it's really just kind of a mid-season ending. There's a lot more going on in that book, so I'm not really going to talk about that. Avengers Assemble, which is the book that they're really kind of using to try and grasp readers from the movie, because it's the movie cast of Avengers, including the Green Hulk, which is not the main continuity Hulk, or at least in the Avengers. This is at a beginning of a second act. So again, it's kind of the beginning of an arc, but not really, because it's part of a larger act. This is also where Marvel's starting to reintroduce the Guardians of the Galaxy, which it's been announced Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be their next big group film that Marvel's working on. So this one is kind of helping to bring that team back into the comic books. We're going to be seeing more of that in future Marvel stories coming up as well. Other things notable coming out this week, Suicide Squad was really good, but it's middle of an arc, standard for how it's been going. You got the guys trying to survive, and they're willing to kill themselves about it. Other thing that came out, Harbinger number 2, continuing that story, which has been really good. That's off to a strong start. The Valiant universe overall has been off to a strong start. We've discussed Exo Man of War, which was the first Valiant book to come back, and it's had issue 3 just come out, or is about to come out. But there's another Valiant book that just came out, starting with issue number 1 on the relaunch, and that's Bloodshot. Now, this was actually a good read for me this week. I was actually a little bit upset. As far as the Valiant books come, this has been the weakest to come out so far. Harbinger has been much stronger with it when it came out, and Exo Man of War has been stronger in its stories. This one felt a little bit weak. In part, some of it is because a lot of the elements of this story are used elsewhere. In fact, it's stuff that I've complained about in reading the GI Combat Unknown Soldier story that's going on right now, of the nanotech and the genetically enhanced person that's able to survive anything because of what the technology that's built into them. Bloodshot's that same type of a super soldier character. However, there's certain elements going on in here of who he is, what's going on, what's affecting him, and that's actually what makes this a bit more interesting. And because I'm not wanting this to be a straight up war story, it works, whereas for me, Unknown Soldier does not work. And I'm really torn because there are elements of Unknown Soldier that start to get really good, and then they die on the vine because they get mixed up in the superhero aspect of it. Bloodshot, I did have that issue. Again, I'm not completely drawn into this role of the super soldier that is fully repairable, but there's elements in here that are really neat. And the fact, the big twist in here is his handlers and who they are, how they deal with him. And it brings in an element of, to reference the old movie that's about to be done as a remake, the Total Recall, where you're not sure what's real, what's fake, what's to be believed. This is another element that was really great with Wolverine for a long time, until they finally had to establish some stuff with who's coming out in the movies, is what the actual history and background of the character is. And because of the way Bloodshot is written, you don't know what it is. It's a mystery. And that actually helps to sell some of the stories. Who really is the character of Bloodshot? Which, if any of the memories that they've shown us are true. And what I think is going to be neat is how they deal with the psyche of him dealing with these known false implants and the handlers around him dealing with those implants and how they treat him because of those implants. Again, it's a good book. I don't want to try to pull you off of it by saying it was my least favorite of the Valiant books so far, because it has been good, and if you were a Bloodshot fan before, I suggest picking it up. I suspect you'll probably be into it. But you know, there's certain things on this that just for me was not strong out of the gate. Now, that's to be expected. You know, they're launching four new books this summer. We got Archer Armstrong coming out next month in issue number one. We'll review that. Bloodshot was good, though. It's just not as strong as something that I just had value for putting out. And, you know, unfortunately, you can't always, not everything is going to come out as fast as it is good. Hopefully, what they're doing with the character, with history, what they build, will help to tell this story and make it a much stronger title. It certainly has that room to grow. And, I'm going to keep on for a while, but it's certainly not something I'm going to drop at any time soon. All right. I think I have to process that. I'm going to go on to another book that was a premiere of sorts. This is a book called Sunset with Christos Gage and Jorge Lucas. Christos is the writing in this, and I've been a big fan of Christos since he did the G.I. Joe Cobra miniseries, which became a sequel, a secondary miniseries. That was doing so well, they turned the mini into an actual, the second mini into an actual ongoing G.I. Joe Cobra book. He's currently writing that. And I picked this up because it was a dollar, and it deals with a soldier from the Korean War who's getting up in age. His wife needs a living nurse to help. And he's the grumpy old man. Actually, when I was reading this book, he kind of reminded me of Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino. If you've seen that movie, he's the grizzled old vet. You know, he's got his idea of what a man is, what a man should do, what a man's goals and what he should be doing for his family, supporting his family. And he doesn't like the world around him. He sees cell phones and computers and all these newfangled gadgets and Priuses, and they're not the world that he grew up in. They're not what he likes. And it gets on his nerves and it bugs him. So that's the basic premise, the setup of who this character is. And then you find out that he's got some old friends that are looking for him. This is, you know, being the single issue, we're not sure exactly who's looking for him and why, but you know it's not going to be good. And we figure out that even though he's old, he's still got a couple of moves left in him. The interesting thing about this is Sunset is actually a graphic novel. It's not an ongoing series. It's not a mini series. It's a graphic novel, and they're going to be releasing it as such. It should be released shortly if it's not already out. If you just want an idea of what it's like to see if it's something that you think you're going to enjoy as a graphic novel, for a dollar, you can't go wrong picking it up. Yeah, I picked it up, go, oh, it's a dollar, I might as well check it out. It's by Christos Gage, so I'm going to enjoy it. But what really blew me away when reading this is Jorge Lucas's art. Because the book is black and white, which may turn some of you off. I know some of you look at black and white and go, oh, it's cheap or it's indie. But what they do with this black and art, it's a very heavy, very contrasty. Yeah, it's not done as a grayscale. It's actually a black and white, and it's not just a line drawing. He forces that perspective of very high contrast into the artwork so that it looks like things are being blown out. If you've ever seen something and it's so bright that it's spreading to affect the areas around it that's being blown out, and he creates that effect in here. When you increase the contrast of stuff, that blowout effect starts to become more and more apparent. And he actually captures that in the inks of the work in here. And it's just great artwork. I really enjoyed just that deep, dark contrast you get. And it's such a simple black and white format that the art was great in here. So I haven't seen the one shot at a dollar to get you interested in buying the graphic novel. I think it was actually a pretty good idea because I'm now looking forward to getting this graphic novel, because of the story. Yeah. And it does deal a bit with the, you know, friends coming looking for him, and now he's, you know, they found him and now he's going to take revenge on him. So it's not exactly an entirely original story, but I think particularly since it's just going to be a graphic, that it'll be worth the story. Yeah, as the single shot graphic. who knows, maybe they'll have more of a story to tell, but I think the reason that they're doing it this way is to give you that simple graphic and hear one and done, enjoy it, just chew on it, have fun, and the art, I just really had a time with the black and white art they did in the interiors. So, another book that I'm really enjoying, it really just kind of threw this in here because I wanted to make sure I mentioned it. And I wasn't intending to go through all the other books that I had this week. In fact, I still have a couple books that I've got that I haven't read them yet. Just that many books and that little time. But another book that I'm thoroughly enjoying and enjoying since it came out, and it's getting towards the end of the first arc, is going to be Smoke and Mirrors. And this is another cast book, which is another reason why I'm picking up Sunset. And it's also co-written by Armstrong, who is an actual magician. So Smoke and Mirrors, magician. We've discussed this book before, and it continues to blow me away with how they're able to work in the real actual magic versus the conjuring, the magical power that actually powers this world. It's a great combination. I love seeing how it all fits together. And then at the end, there's an article written by an actual magician talking about the history of magic or how magic and concepts have been interrelated. This one was actually very poignant in discussing how magicians are actually some of the most honest people. They tell you they're going to fool you, and then they fool you. Going back, you know, tradition from Houdini, tradition with the amazing Randy, who puts on the amazing meeting every year and offers a $1 million prize to psychics who can prove that they actually have psychic powers. So the book itself has got some great stuff going on in there. Had to mention it because it's continuing to be strong. And I just have so much fun reading it because it's different from so many of the other books that are out in the comic landscape. With comics, you tend to see a lot of crime and superheroes, and this is definitely something different from that. It's taking a turn in here to introduce a more of a villainous character, but it's still not your straight up superhero villain bad guy story. And for the superhero villain bad guy story, we're going to head over towards Batman, which of course is one of the classic titles. And actually we're going to start off with Batman and Robin. This book has been rather interesting because Damian, who is the current Robin in the Batman universe since the DC relaunch and actually prior to, he's Bruce Wayne's biological son. His mother is Talia al Ghul. And he's a brat. He's a snotty, sniveling brat. Which we can't truly blame him because he was raised by Talia with the League of Assassins, so he's been trained to kill since he was born. He was trained to be a fighter, and he's as good or better than most of the fist-fighting heroes out there, the pugilists, those that are going to scrap with you. And so he's rightfully arrogant, especially with his pedigree, and he's determined to show this and show off to the previous Robins. That's Tim Drake, Jason Todd, and Dick Grayson. So in the previous issue, he actually said, I'm going to challenge and take something from you. And he starts off with Tim, because Tim has been the most recent Robin. He moves on to attacking, Jason Todd in this. And that takes up the first half of this story, is Damian going after Jason Todd. The second half is, actually, Damian has very little to do with it. He's kind of he becomes the shadow of Batman, as Robin so often is just seen. What's interesting is how they're writing this book with, Pete Tomasi is writing this. And it's interesting because they're using that first aspect of Damian, who is a dark character, and particularly with the first arc in here, which made it very dark. Traditionally, Robin has been the bright side to Batman. He's been what grounds Batman, keeps him in the real world from going over that cliff of insanity and doing the things that would make him more of a punisher, make him more of a straight up vigilante than a crime fighter, push him into that realm of being the bad guys that he pursues. Robin is actually pushing that arc now, and Batman is being the anchor for Robin with Damian as Robin, because Damian was raised, you don't like somebody, you kill them. And Bruce is going, no, you can't kill. And he's got, having to rein Damian in. So it's an interesting dynamic that's going on with that. And because it's been in the past that Robin's been lighter, I think that's why they're trying to build in some... It seems like there's a built-in, not funny, haha, but overall, when you look back at it, funny, of Damian going after the other Robins. And the type of villains that they're fighting in the second half of this book, which they also had in the previous book, who are people that Batman has defeated in combat and are permanently scarred. There's one guy who's got a boot print on his face from where Batman kicked him in the face, and it's permanently there. And that's now, you know, he's boot face as a villain. So they're going back to some of those campier villains, but it's written in a much darker style. So it's really interesting to see how campy verse and the inherent humor of the camp characters that you have with the Dark Robin, the Batman, and just the dark race style overall that pervades throughout DC right now. It's a good, very interesting book. It works, and I think it's because they're keeping the humor on that suggestive level of look back on this and laugh. Because there's an absurdity to it, where as opposed to laying it straight out there on the ground. For me, it's definitely working. But it's certainly an odd flavor. It's something you're not quite used to when you're reading it. Moving on to the Batman solo book, where Robin does not make an appearance solo. It's interesting that actually we have Dick Grayson show up, not as a but actually a dick. This is the end of Schneider's Court of Owls arc, with Lincoln Marsh as the politician who was trying to take over Gotham, which was going to run, and who was then taken out by the Court of Owls, and Batman, which is where Batman discovers the whole Court of Owls, and he had the Night of Owls crossover with all the bat titles, and now you got the finale, as it says on the cover, for the Court of Owls in this, where, and I'm going to go ahead and spoil issue number 10, this is issue number 11, so if you haven't read 10 yet, pause it for, or skip over the next 30 seconds, put it on mute for 30 to 45 seconds, and then come back in. Now you have a second to do that, go ahead, and in issue 10, Lincoln Marsh reveals that he is Bruce Wayne's brother, Thomas Wayne Jr. That was kind of a bombshell, and I like how they ended up in this, where they made it so that there's still a little bit of a question, but they pretty much just disavowed it. And I'm glad they did, because for me, it was too much of a contrived, you know, story point they were trying to make. And I didn't feel that it fit naturally within the DC Universe. As shoehorned in as I felt some elements of Court of Owls, because you've never had this before. And I realized that they're really much remaking the world, but they kept so much of the bat in this world previously, because I've never had this, had the Batman, this element in the Batman story before. It so felt shoehorned in since they kept so much in the relaunch. They've shown elements of Court of Owls all the way back to an All-Star Western. There are still elements showing up. Show that it was back when Gotham was founded. That's one of the things that's nice about reading a book like, you know, the All-Star Western, and, you know, the Demon Knights book is also giving kind of a history of the DC Universe as it currently now exists. With this Batman book, though, I felt that they were pushing too much on by trying to tell you that Lincoln was, in fact, Bruce's younger brother. They tied it up fairly nice that there's still a little bit of a question, so that if a writer in the future comes in and wants to tackle this, they could in fact bring Lincoln back as the brother. And then they continue to play that card. Lincoln will, if it does come back, which they wanted to open up, we didn't find the body. So, you know, with that being left open, they could bring him back and having to continue to try and play that card of, oh, yeah, I'm your brother, but I don't, yeah. And with that in mind, yeah, and I guess you muted it probably just to get that, and sorry. But if you play that card, another worker could play that card, and then bring him back, he could still have that thought and that claim, and it still will be entirely untrue. Or they can actually make it true. They've left themselves with the opening, which I'm okay with, but I like how they've temporarily 90% resolved this with the claim being false. And I feel so much more comfortable. And the part that probably because it's the status quo of that universe, which is something they always say goes back to status quo. In this case, though, I think it was a safe play. Not just the safe play, because it's always a safe play. Like, I think that it's actually the required play. I think it's what needed to happen for this story. I think if they left it, that it was his brother, you know the character's coming back, it just would be too awkward. So, I'm glad the way that they ended that. And I'll go ahead and move on. I actually kind of wondering with Batman where they're going to go, because we've got Batman is going to be facing the Joker coming up in the next major arc, and Joker's actually going to be facing off against the Bat family, so that's going to be another one of those Bat Universe cross tie-ins. So with Joker coming back, so it'll be interesting to see where the next issue is going to take us as we head into the meeting of the Joker again. But last book I'm going to talk about this week is going to be another book that's ending an arc, and that is Peter Pan's Faust. Issue number 5 is the first arc as told by Tools. There's now a second arc that's coming, and it's going to be told by Curly, the one of the Lost Boys. And this has been a book that's been so fun to see how Weeb has been able to meld the world of Peter Pan, the characters from the world of Tools, the Lost Boys, Wendy, John, and Michael, and create this World War II. They're living in World War II France, and how that has... how these characters would live in that world, but still bring in the familiar elements of the Peter Pan story. I've had so much fun reading this that, to see issue, to see the end of the arc, and then there's more coming. I've seen something that indicated it may have been a new series, and if it was, I'm glad they're continuing it. I'm sure it will eventually have to end, but they've got a great story going now, and it is very much reminiscent of the stories you read of Peter Pan. If you read the original works, you can consider pick out little elements that they've gone, oh, this is that element. We discussed previously when they introduced the Hook character how he loses his hand to hand in a fight. We discussed how when he was with her brother. With her brothers, and a plane that gets shot down, and of course, in the original story, Tinkerbell has the Lost Boys shoot Wendy out of the sky, so there's those elements that are combined. It's been such a fun ride to see that, and yet it still stands as its own story, and if you had no Peter Pan reference for this, you would still be able to enjoy the story. It's so well told that it stands alone, even without those elements, the references to Peter Pan, that I think may make it so much more enjoyable on another level. Most of you know that this was the beginning for Comic-Con International in San Diego. So some of you may even have gone. Hopefully you enjoyed yourself. Apparently the good news, creators you like are working on properties that you like and producing more stuff. There's a lot of stuff that can come out of there. Most of it is just promotional. Here's our new movie. Here's our new comic book. Here's creative team. And we're going to kind of tease you with what story arcs are coming up. And it's not news for me. Most of that is just promotional. There is one bit of that, which, because of the magnitude of the players involved, does stand out a bit against the normal practice of here's what we've got coming up, and that is that Neil Gaiman and J.H. Williams III are going to be bringing us a Sandman and Ace series in 2013. This is going to be a prequel for Gaiman's original run on Sandman. Gaiman is a huge name in novels. He's worked on Doctor Who, the TV show, and made a huge splash when he did the original Sandman stories. This is going to be a prequel for that untold story that he felt he finally had, knew what it was that he had to tell. So he's going to come, go ahead and give us that story. J.H. Williams did Promethea. He was working on Batwoman. So his art is amazing. If you really want to see a lot of interesting art in a series, check out Promethea, what he does with different mediums. And you know, there are psychedelic influences. There's reality. There's computer. There's painting and traditional comic art, all in that one series is beautiful. So with the skill that J.H. has to bring that to the storytelling that the game's going to bring forth, it's just a huge story to have that coming out of Comic-Con. It's probably the biggest announcement of the series and books. And there's been a lot of stuff going on. One of the other things that happens at Comic-Con is they do the Eisner Awards. So we'd mentioned that the nominees have been released, and we'll go over a couple of them. The best single issue that came Eisner Award winner was Mark Waid and Paolo La Rivera for Daredevil number 7. Waid and Paolo also won for the best ongoing series. They won the Eisner for that. So if you haven't been reading Daredevil, that might just be the reason to pick it up, is what Waid and Paolo Rivera have been doing has gotten them Eisner Awards for it. So that's huge. And if you're looking for a new series, that might be the one to check out. If you're looking for a limited series, Criminal Last of the Innocent by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips won the Eisner for that. Mark Waid's just been killing it because he also got the Best Writer Award. The Best Writer Artist went to Craig Thompson for Habibi. The Best Penciler Award went to Ramon K. Perez for Jim Henson's Tale of Sand, which also won a number of awards. Jim Henson's Tale of Sand was put out by Arkea and has got a number of Eisner Awards. So that's another one that you might want to check out, particularly if you're a Henson fan, you like The Dark Crystal and other of Henson's worlds. Best Cover Artist, Francesco Francavilla, has won that one, and his art is just amazing. Put up a couple of pieces that you can see through our G Plus page, our Facebook page. We try and put up some cool stuff over there. Best lettering was Stan Sakai, who does Asagi Yojimbo. He's also the letterer for Gru, if they ever put out any more Gru comic books. So I've been a fan of Stan's for that. There are a lot of fans of Usagi Yojimbo. So when those comic books come out, check those out and trade. Stan's just been working forever and ever, and he deserves the Eisner Award that he got this year. Couple of other big awards: the Russ Manning Promising Newcomer Award went to Tyler Cook. So keep your eyes out for Tyler. You might enjoy some of his work. He's the up and comer, apparently. And then the Bob Clampett Humanitarian Award goes to Marie Doyle and Stephen Skeets. There's a lot of other awards. I encourage you to go check out the Eisner Awards, see who all has won. If you're looking for something new and interesting to read, the award winners are a great place to go and check out to see who's won what. The Eisners honor the best in the comics industry. So if you want something to read, that's a place to go check it out. And then come back here and we'll tell you what we've found that's new and interesting, or that's worth jumping on board for as we go through all the weekly comic books. In a little bit of old news, back when Astonishing X-Men came out, apparently the Florida Family Association has decided they didn't like that and started a email campaign to Disney as well as the Marvel executives to try and get them to pull Astonishing X-Men off of shelves. Of course, this is kind of rather old news. They've already had the wedding, and there was an uproar about that, to which the comic fans said, hey, stop being obnoxious, you know, this is the world we live in, and just because we portray it in a comic book doesn't make it the comic book bad. Yeah. We've had a lot of people standing against, so the Florida Family Association has started their email campaign. Mainly, apparently, according to the New York Times, it mainly consists of David Catan, who was a former American Family Association president, which was another group that pulled similar stunts on what they believe family values should be and trying to control what other people's families' values are. They're just form emails that were sent out. Wajahat Ali of the Center for American Progress told the New York Times, it's literally one dude with a poorly made website, one fringe individual with an email list. So, unfortunately, when you deal with things like same-sex relationships, same-sex weddings, that's when these fringe groups come out trying to protect their children because they think they know better than you do about what should be taught. And by silencing the things that they don't agree about, they'll actually be able to prevent those things from happening. Unfortunately, they are wrong. They just can't see that. All right. As we move forward to the future of comic books, we're going to start off with Eric Powell. And he started a Kickstarter campaign for his comic book, The Goon, to create a movie. It's supposed to be an animated movie. If you're a fan of The Goon and you want to see this come out as an actual movie, look up Eric Powell's Kickstarter campaign. You'll be able to donate there to make it happen. Yeah. Goon has been one of the longest running independents. It's done really well as an independent, so you know, certainly has its own following that it might be able to pull off this Kickstarter campaign and get its own movie going. So you know, if it's something that might be worth, you know, if you're kind of curious, go ahead and check out Goon. I'm sure your shop probably has some back issues. Stop in your local shop, get some stuff. Pick up a couple of issues, and then you might just say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and bash Sean or bash Eric on this and get that movie rolled. Okay. Two other things to discuss. And first one is going to be Marvel is going to be ending 9 of its titles in October. This is part of the Marvel Now initiative, which starting in October will be relaunching a number of titles, either relaunching them or canceling and adding new titles starting October through February. Maybe there's a rolling start as opposed to DC, which did a full stop and then relaunched everything. Marvel seems to think fans will like that better if they do a rolling start, because it's that then you're not spending all of your money all at once in 1 month to pick up everything to see if you like it. You can buy one or two new comics each month, see if you like it. It's an interesting concept. It'll be interesting because they're not supposedly they're not doing the full relaunch of the universe. They're going to be relaunching some of the titles. There's going to be some changes. There's going to be, when we discussed Astonishing X-Men and a couple of the other books that we were talking about last week. So, which is a series that they're going to be going on, there will be more announced as they go. But if you're reading these titles, you're more sure if you want to keep them, or if you were about to start reading them and you weren't sure, Captain America, Fantastic Four, FF, which is the Future Foundation, Incredible Hulk, and Invincible Iron Man, New Mutants, The Mighty Four, Uncanny X-Men, and X-Men Legacy are all going to be canceled. The last issues come out in October. So, yeah. Some of you, if you're the type of person that needs that completionist, just hold off till October and you can. And they'll be relaunching. I'm sure most of these will probably get number one in relaunches. Some of them will probably be folded over and taken care of as part of other groups that have situations for the relaunch. So, Marvel's got a lot going on trying to take advantage of this, of the popularity that the DC's been able to receive and get with this relaunch. So they put into the motion their plans. Again, for Marvel, they're not going to do what DC did and relaunch the entire universe. Supposedly, all the histories are going to totally remain intact. So we'll have to see what's going on with that. And lastly, the future of comics is here. Well, it will be here on July 23rd. That's when the Diamond launches their new digital distribution. But what this is going to do is going to allow your local comic shop to get in on the digital revolution. And we'll see how long that lasts. Diamond teamed with Ivers to create codes that you'll be able to buy from your local comic shop. You'll be walking and say, hey, I want a digital code for an indie comic book. And they'll be able to sell you code for it. You'll then be able to enter that code into your digital comic reader and buy, and you'll be able to read that comic book on your digital reader. They're also offering what they're calling Digital Plus, which means you buy the physical copy, and for an additional 99 cents, you're given the code, you can get a digital copy of that book. So you can actually have a physical copy, take it, put it in a bag, seal it, make it nice and airtight, put it in your, into the dark corner of your long box, and then you'll go read it on your digital, whatever digital reader you got. I don't know if it's worth it for 99 cents to get the digital copy as well as the physical copy. We'll see how that goes. And then the idea behind this is they'll be able to keep you involved with your local comic shop is great. Some of your local shops will be able to put this on websites that you can literally just go to your comic shop's website. It's heroesaiden.com and buy your books from them digitally and get the code that way. A digital comic reader will also allow you to buy those codes and credit your local shop. So if your shop doesn't have a website, you can go to digitalcomicreader.com and get your books there. Notably missing from the lineup, though, both Marvel and DC. Now, they've got some big hitters. IDW, Boom, Archaea, Archie, and a number of others are there. I believe I even saw Image. I put it on my list. So they do have a number of the big companies with IDW Boom. We'll have to see what comes up. What if Marvel and DC, because they have their own digital initiatives, if they become involved with the line. And unfortunately, I'm kind of cynical about this model, because if I buy all my books digitally, whether it's directly from Marvel and DC, or through Comixology, or through Diamond, at some point you're just going to go, why am I going through my comic shop bubble, which is rather sad. I prefer the physical paper in hand that I can flip back and forth through. It's a little bit more wieldy, a very stack of books with you than it is just an iPad or just a Google Reader tablet, but in the end, I like that physicality that I have. I love being able to see a big two-page spread that's actually 2 pages wide, as opposed to shrunk down in half a page in size, which is what you get in any digital reader, even the biggest screens. So, for me, at least right now, I'm looking forward to being able to go to a comic shop every Wednesday. This is a community. You go in there, and everybody is there, and they're there both. You get to talk with them. You can ask them what they think, what books are good, what they're buying, what hasn't been as good. And there's a community that's built there. You can build friendships with these people. It's worth going into a store for that, because these people all have the same interests as you. And even if you disagree about which book, was written better, whether you're a Marvel fan or a DC fan, or, you're just wanting to get, unwritten, just something completely different. Going to the shop is an entirely different experience than just going online and ordering a digital copy. Never seen anybody living in a sterile environment. Hopefully at least you're getting some information about comics or to read by listening to a podcast like this. But it certainly can make it harder to deal with, when you're just doing it digitally. I think it's worth going in your comic shop. And I applaud Diamond for trying to keep stores involved with the digital edition. They could have completely left out of the dark. Comixology also has a way for stores to benefit from digital copies that Comixology sells. So if you do use Comixology and maybe have a store that you use frequently, you still go to for those books that you can't get it digitally. Check and see if if you can support them through Comixology, check, or if they're going to be doing Diamond. So support them that way, so that the store is still there carrying the books that aren't available digitally, getting the trades, and a sense of community that you can only get from actually being in a store where there's other people all around. Alright, that's enough about the evils and the loves of digital comics, and I'm going to go ahead and let you go. It's been quite a while. for solo show. So if you want to get a hold of us, all our information is at about.me/comicbooktesseract. You can find articles about comic books and other similar nerd-related activities at comicbooknerd.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Google+, Twitter. You can email us, send us voicemail, leave us a text. All of that information is at about.me/comicbooktesseract. So if you need to find us, about.me/comicbooktesseract, let you know exactly where you need to go to find us. And we'll see you next week when we step inside the Tesseract.